Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji. Nice and a triple header if you're listening on podcast players. They'll be split into three separate videos on YouTube. The Tour de Suisse Stage 4 recap, then Baloise Belgium Tour and Slovenia Stages 1 and 1 for both of them. We've got Remco Evenepoel. He is back. The Tour de Suisse, though, we'll do first as it is a World Tour race. We'll honour the World Tour designation for this race, even though it wasn't that exciting a stage. 171 Ks from Sankt-Urban to Stade. One big climb of the day, the Sana Musa Pass, 7.5 Ks, 4.4%. Very regular, then a descent of 5 to 6 kilometres, then a very flat finish on what looked like an airfield. Wet today, raining on and off. Mathieu van der Poel narrowly in the leader's jersey, I believe, ahead of Julien Alaphilippe by 1 second and Kung by 4 seconds. I'll let Benji do the break in a second, but if you hear some noise, someone drilling in the sunny Egypt at 5:30 doing that, not my fault. There was a kid making noise outside, though, in the hallway. They've been dealt with, but I can't do anything about the drilling. All right, Benji, there's some break shenanigans early on that didn't make sense to you that you brought up with me.
Yeah, I found it pretty funny because we started off the stage with a breakaway of, I think it was four riders. And that breakaway actually held on for half of the stage. And halfway the race, the break was caught. And the peloton chased down that breakaway and caught that breakaway. Because then we saw attacks. Wout Poels and Rohan Dennis onto the attack. In a three-man group, I don't know which the third rider was in that attack. But a very odd move because it's like in the middle of a stage and the climb is like very far ahead. Perhaps Dennis and Poels were like, oh, we're going to try something. And they were gone for a little bit, like a good 30 seconds, minute. And, well, in time that they were ahead, not as in the gap, because the gap was nowhere near that. And eventually they got caught again, and another breakaway got away. And then suddenly peloton changed their mind. They're like, oh, that first breakaway with people that didn't matter for GC, those were dangerous. Yes, we're going to catch them. But the second breakaway of the day, the ones with, again, riders that don't matter for GC, those guys can take the stage. Because from now on, we don't care about the stage win anymore. And that breakaway included Stefan Bissiger, Benjamin Thomas. We've got Joey Roscoe, I think, and also another rider, Joel Sutter, if my mind is correct. Roscoe now rides for Rally?
Yes.
That's right. Really? Oh, my God. Sorry, mind blown. Anyway, they eventually started the climb with 7 minutes. 7 minutes on the peloton.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah.
Well, cowardice.
I can't wrap my head around it. Like,
it's cowardice. I mean, you've been beaten by Mathieu van der Poel 2 days in a row on sort of puncher-style stages. This isn't a puncher stage. It's a very linear stage that should be more easy to control than those stages. You've got Pancake flat, then a big ring climb, 7.5 Ks, 4%. I mean, Bissiger was, you know, fine on it, and he's not the best climber in the world. I mean, neither is Thomas either. But and then it's a flat sprint finish. It's wet. It's not the stage MVDP would have necessarily. I mean, he would have still been the favorite, but I'm not saying it's guaranteed he would have won. And teams like Bike Exchange with Matthews, Movistar for Ivan Garcia, Cortina, Cofidis for Laporte. Cofidis wouldn't help. They didn't help Movistar. Movistar decided with the gap at 6 minutes that was the time to start really pulling it back, which, again, is, if you want to have designs on a stage, and we've seen this in the Giro, don't start pulling at 5 minutes. Pull at 2 minutes, keep it tight, and you know then you can bring it back and really have a go at the end. So pretty funny from the World Tour teams or the other World Tour teams that basically were scared of being beaten by Mathieu van der Poel. Again, can we blame them? I think so. You know, you always have to try. Still, even if your rider has a 5% chance of a World Tour victory, even Garcia Cortina doesn't win World Tour races every day. So the break was going to win. And yeah, what did you see on that climb, Benji? It was basically Suter struggling.
Yeah, Sutra was struggling, and it's weird because I do recall him climbing pretty well in, I think, the Tour of Turkey on that Gogu Belly climb or whatever it was called. He was in the break as well, and he rode away from that. People. What the fuck? I don't know how I remember it. Okay. So Joel Sutter attacked there from the breakaway and actually held on for quite a long time. So I was surprised that he was the first one to drop on the climb here. A bit of an odd comparison between the two, I know, but still. Anyway, he was dropping from the breakaway, so three men left, and they were about to drop into this descent. And the peloton, we had some moves. I think Anton Palzer did something. I don't know why, but at a certain point, I watched the TV, and he was like 5 meters before the peloton, and I looked back, and he was caught again. So no clue what happened. There were too many races going on to be interested in what the peloton was doing on that climb into the Swiss. And eventually in the descent, Bissiger was a very decent descender, Thomas as well. Roscoff, which I expect to be relatively decent at descending, did end up being on a few gaps sometimes. And let's be honest, nothing really happened for the rest of the stage. And they entered the last 200 meters, which was a really cool finish.
Roscoff tried to attack the two track guys. He tried to attack them a couple of times. He didn't want to go to the finish with Bissiger and Thomas because I think Benjamin Thomas, he's Omnium world champ or something. And Bissiger is definitely a track guy as well. Yeah, Benjamin Thomas won the Omnium, I think, in 2020. Don't quote me on that. So they're both quick guys. And Roscoff is more a TT-style engine guy, not a sprinter. So, yeah, he tried to shake them off. And, yeah, what sort of finish was it? It was weird. It was like that stage four in the Dauphiné last year, an airfield.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It looked like that. And it was Bissiger going into the last 250 meters. He took the front. He decided to take on the sprint in first place. And usually Thomas is a pretty decent sprinter, as in he can actually get like a far top 10 position somewhere in a sprint. And he decided to go from second place. Roscoff was in third place, was on a bit of a gap a bit earlier and got back again after
Roscoff was first, basically. He let it out.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God, my memory.
But then he faded right straight away. It was basically between Bissiger let out Thomas. Yeah? Bissiger let out Thomas. Yeah, and okay. Then Thomas was, we thought he got into the wheel of Bissiger and they kicked really late, 175 to go. And then Bissiger just kept going. And that's why, yeah, Benji and I were surprised because Thomas is a really good sprinter. And yeah, Bissiger absolutely smoked him really in this wet sprint in the Tour de Suisse, winning his second World Tour race of the season, won the stage in Paris-Nice, the TT, ahead of Remy Cavagna. So was it Kuhn won stage, the TT? Bissiger won this stage, so two Swiss wins already for the Tour de Suisse. And he's a really strong rider, Stefan Bissiger. But it all panned out perfectly for him because he really received little pressure on that climb. So how we'll go in a proper medium mountain stage, I'm not so sure. Here's the top 10. Bissiger, Thomas, Roscoff, Suter, Edward Turns, that is. Molana, Fraile, Turnison, Wright, Matthews in 10. No changes to the top 10 in GC. Any other thoughts on this Tour de Suisse stage, Benji?
Two things. First of all, why the hell are you sprinting Turns in Milano? Like, why? It makes zero fucking sense to sprint for 5th and 6th position. You're nowhere near the front of the points classification. UCI points, let's be real. If you're going to go for that these days, well, okay, you can have it. But yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
PCS points?
Yeah, that's the reason. Anyway, the second thing I want to point is that someone asked me today what we think that the limits are for Bissiger because he's climbing relatively decently. We don't know what that's going to be like on proper climbing competition. Yesterday he dropped, so let's be real. It's not insane. We've seen him do prologues. We've seen him do... Cobbles, wasn't he in RVV, the last rider that got caught from the breakaway? Where do we think his limits lie? Do we think that, for example, a rider like Bissiger, let's say he could also do stuff like we are expecting from a Ganna on Roubaix, for example, because he seems to be that kind of person that fits that perfectly.
Yeah, he seems much more suited to something like Roubaix. I mean, we saw in Paris-Nice on a sort of hilly circuit, he was struggling a lot to protect the leader's jersey. I think which he went into. So he's not tall. He's a really stocky, well-built guy. One of the biggest guys in cycling, in road cycling, that is. So I think, Roubaix suits him a lot, actually. And how many years is he under contract for? That's what I'm going to check. He's got another year with EF next year. He's 22 years old. If you're, I think there'll be some other teams sniffing around, Bora Hansgrohe, Quickstep. He's an absolute animal. Stefan Bissiger.
Bing Bang Tour.
Bing Bang, yeah, exactly.
He got 12 last year, so he can definitely do better than that this year.
For sure. He can be a GC candidate for Bing Bang Tour GC. Tomorrow's stage starts from Start again, goes to Lurkebad, 176Ks. We've got the first proper hilltop finish of this year's Tour de Suisse and a stage that Mathieu van der Poel will not be contesting. They have Cat 1, it was called a Cat 1 at the door, 7Ks, 5%. It's not that bad. Then a long descent and then a long valley of like 100 kilometers before a series of hills gradually getting a bigger start, 3.2Ks, 4%. Then they do the Erschmatt, the hardest climb of the day, 8Ks, 8.4% descent. Then a finish up to Lurkebad, 4.1Ks at 7%. I just want to see that profile because it looks like, to me, the Erschmatt climb, pretty regular. The finish, though, seems to level off from 2,000 meters to go to the last K, and then it kicks up even more at the line. So I dare say the finish is quite steep. And I think Alaphilippe is going to win this stage.
I think that's a good call. I don't want to say the same name. And therefore, I'm going to go Ham. And I'm going to say that the winner of this stage is going to be... Oh, why do you always do this to me? Why do I not think about it before we get to this point of the podcast?
Edward Dunbar.
After such a long way. No. I'm not saying Edward Dunbar. I'm also not saying the likes of a Pulsar or so forth. I'd love Antonio Nibali to win, but that's never going to happen. So I'm going to go with the name of Shockman? I don't know.
Shockman's a good call.
Rui Costa. Tour de Suisse? Why not?
Zero chance. Absolutely.
Rui Costa wins.
All that I've seen from Rui Costa at the Tour de Suisse so far is crashing and then peeing today. So I don't think
he's bike throwing. Technically,
yeah, bike throwing as well.
Not over the line, but like literally.
Do we have there's racket abuse in tennis to see? Is there an equivalent in cycling? Anyway, Tour de Suisse tomorrow. No, there should be a big GC shake-up, one would think, at 8K, 8.4%. Maybe we'll see something there. Maybe Carapaz attacks early and then goes on the descent. That could be a good option. The problem is the stage is really easy before then. It's 100Ks of flat. So it's difficult for the guys of this caliber to have a really real selection on that, but it's a hard climb. 8K is 8.4%. But one to tune into more tomorrow than the one today. Next race that we're going to do is the Tour of Slovenia. Before we get to that, I'll mention our show partner, Lacol. Lacol produced performance cycling apparel. It's backed by Aero Wind Tunnel Testing. They have the Lacol McLaren Project Aero collaboration. It's precision engineered Aero. And it's been co-developed with McLaren's aerodynamicists in order to deliver a kit that outperforms the competition. So it's not free speed, speed you can purchase. If you want to check out our show partner, Lacol, then you can see them in the description below. There's also the Lacol Strava official challenge, where if you record 300 active minutes or complete 160-kilometer ride in under 6 hours, you go into a draw to win two chances to win the complete Lacol McLaren Project Aero collection. But now on to Tour of Slovenia, 2-dot pro race. Don't typically do them, but the Tour de France champion is preparing for the tour this year at the Tour of Slovenia. I did a little preview video on my channel. We won't do a preview here in the interest of time. The profile today, sprint stage, 153Ks, like one Cat 3 climb. Some rolly climbs that really nailed on sprint stage, finishing in Rogaška Slatina. The best sprinter here is Phil Bauhaus. The best train here is Bahrain Victorious on the team of Phil Bauhaus. So he was the heavy, heavy favorite. Who are some other low-key sprinters on the start list, Benji, that maybe people haven't heard of before?
Well, for example, we've got Abadastri here for Caja Rural. We have Rui Oliveira for UAE, a rider that actually... has been doing lead outs quite a lot of times before. I think in the Vuelta last year, he was doing so for Philipsen, if my mind serves me right. Alain Banaschek and Ryan for Mazovsze. We have the likes of Malucelli here for Androni, that Polish dude on Bingo, Aniol Kowski. We've got perhaps Rob Stannard. I don't know. Could be, I guess. And I think there's some other names in there that could do decent in a sprint, but those are the main figures that I was looking at before the stage. And I think that I was slightly hoping I'd see something of good old Restrepo, the guy that was doing that Vuelta climb at high percentages a few years ago. I think the stage that Kudus did well in as well, but I don't remember at all which stage it was. It was like 3-4 years ago. But anyway, that is basically it when it comes to the sprinters in my eyes, and a lot of like Slovenian riders that get their say and get their attempt at riding their home race in, well, some in their Slovenian country colors. So good stuff. Good to see some talent in Slovenia, because this is also where we found out about Pogacar a bit, like you mentioned on that video you just plugged and I replugged just a second ago. But I also had an eye on Markus Hulgaard for UnoX. He's been doing decent as well. And he's, well, quite technically good.
Yeah, he's a good cobbler. He could be a good cobbler maybe in the future. Good at like punchy climbs with a flat finish. Maybe he's really young. UnoX got a lot of young, talented guys. But yeah, Bauhaus was the out-and-out favorite. And it was up to Bahrain to control the break of the day. They kept it, I mean, the opposite, apples and oranges to Tour de Suisse. Tour of Slovenia, they got that at, you know, 3 minutes, 2:30. They're keeping it in check all day. You know it's going to be a sprint finish. And, I mean, it pretty much was. They brought the break back with about 13Ks to go. There was the token. I think the Team Slovenia rider attacked with 8Ks to go. You sometimes see that from, like, the wildcard teams in the Vuelta or something on the nailed-on sprint stages. And then it's the difficulty I found is with Tour de Hungary, which I was watching, and now is the team of Michael Reim and Bahrain, their kit looks almost identical. They almost, I think they even have the same helmet supplier, and they're both always going for the sprint. So it looks like there's 9 Bahrain guys leading out, but instead it's only 5 with like 4Ks to go. And let me just read out, you know, their sprint train. Hausler, who needs no introduction, experience.
The king of cobbles, yeah. The Roubaix future winner of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
We both like Heinrich Hausler. Jan Tratnik, Marcel Seberg, who was Greipel's lead out man for ages, I think.
Retiring, right?
On Lotto Soudal, retiring at the end of this year, yes. 39 years old, I mean, the experience as well. Mohoric, Kevin Inclar, Tratnik, if I haven't mentioned, and Jonathan Milan, who is a 20-year-old Italian, who big guy, you know, he's 6'3", six at least.
He's always with his tongue out at the front of the peloton.
Oh, really?
It's so funny.
I think they had him chasing today. Anyway, he's huge. Big draft behind him, you know, and sprinter as well. So he won a stage at the Baby Giro last year. So really talented and experienced sprint train. For a race like this, they did what they needed to do. They basically dominated the front all of the last 6 kilometers and then dropped off Bauhaus. There's a slight right-hand soft bend, dropped him off with about 175, 200 to go. Bauhaus kicked, and as he showed at Hungary, in a sort of compared to this sort of competition, he is too good, although coming second and pushing him very close, maybe were it not for the lead out for Bauhaus and him having the shorter line around that bend, Abarasturi, who Benji mentioned, was very quick. And if this was another 50 meters that Bauhaus had to sprint, maybe he doesn't win this stage. But otherwise, the interesting note, I think, for the results is, as Benji mentioned, Rui Oliveira for UAE Team Emirates coming third. They didn't go for Trentin. They didn't go for Ulisses.
Yep, surprising.
Yeah, I thought they'd go for Trentin, Benji. Like, surely this would have been a chance.
I forgot he was here until you mentioned it just a second ago.
This must mean his days are done going for sprints, right?
Well, flat sprints, they should be. Like, He's never been an amazing flat sprinter. He's always been to the farther edges of a top 10 in that. Well, in this competition, he might be able to do decently, but might as well give the opportunity to a rider like Rui Oliveira, who's 24 years old and who actually has, like, a potential future in flat sprints ahead of him. Perhaps lead out, perhaps sprinter, we don't know it yet. He might still break through by the end of this season or next season. But all in all, I think that it's good that they give youngsters, opportunities, while Trentin has other goals this season, probably.
Yeah. Fourth is Anielkowski. Stanislav Anielkowski is Polish national champ for Bingol. Bingo Al. He came fourth. Malucelli, fifth. Edmondson, sixth. They didn't actually go for Rob Stannard bike exchange. Edmondson seemed to sprint. Banaszek, 7th Christensen and Bostock 9th, both on Canyon, DHB Sun God, and Alonso 10th. Now, I seem to recall in one of the races David Decker won last year, I think with Canyon, there was two Canyon guys. I think the team might have changed name. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Whatever the Canyon were called, and they both sprinted and they weren't happy with each other. I think Brenton Jones was sprinting against his teammate just about. But anyway, that little anecdote aside from a sort of 1-1 race in Belgium in 2020. Otherwise.
And then you're complaining that I remember Joel Sitter in the Tour of Turkey in our Swiss podcast.
Yeah, it is a bit outrageous, I guess. Tomorrow's stage is a little bit more complicated than today's stage at the Tour of Slovenia because we've got two climbs during this 148K stage from Žižalek to Čelije, 4.8K at 7%, then a valley of 40 to 50 kilometers, then the Svetina climb, 5.2K at 7.7%, then a descent, short little valley, then a punch up to the finish of 2K at 7.2%. I think UAE will go for Ulissi. I think Pogacar will lead out Ulissi. I don't know why I think that. I don't know why. But I think they're going to ride for Ulissi tomorrow. Who are you picking for the stage, Benji?
I think they could combine both, you know. Bogi's here to test out his legs probably and might as well do so with a small attack on that Svetina climb perhaps. And then if the group comes together, you've got Ulissi for the final climb. So I think there's a lot of options here. I think that UAE will decide how the race is ridden most likely. Although I'm always curious what happens when it comes to other riders in this race, because we're saying that this is a one-man deal, this Tour of Slovenia, but I've seen surprising things in the past already. So I do expect Pogacar to win GC, but perhaps a stage like this could have a relatively surprising winner that we didn't see coming in the first place. Maybe a resurrection of Bataglin after 10 years.
there's some guys that maybe 10 years ago we would have been picking Visconti and Patrick Lynn on Bardiani. Visconti, I mean, he's won a stage at Slovenia, I think, in 2019. So maybe Visconti for top three, top four. Who else would I like for that? Can Fellini finish, or does he need the climb and then a flat finish from a reduced group or Stannard? Is Stannard the same as Fellini in that respect?
The problem with Fellini is that he's really inconsistent when it comes to actually winning stuff. I think he won that Italian race last year, but nothing really more than that in recent years. So I don't really expect too much from Fellini personally. I don't know. I feel like they might focus on Romo for the entire Slovenia just to try and get him a good GC, which is likely. He's probably going to top five this thing. And I think that their focus might lie there instead of Fellini, for example. But I also want to point out the rider that was in the breakaway today, Jonas Iversby-Widerberg. He won the U23 European Championships last year in that Blue A parkour. And he won that on an uphill sprint. And yeah, we know that hilly parkours, perhaps this is very much alike. It's also the same guy that had the photo finish at the Norwegian Championships last year with Bistrøm, and they didn't know who won. And they didn't have a photo finish, so they had to go on the feeling of the jury commissar who decided Bistrøm was Norwegian winner. So, while I'm still saying that Widerberg won that race.
Okay, I didn't know that about him. You know, X is always one to follow. Yeah, tomorrow should be an interesting stage. I'm particularly going to be watching closely to see what UAE try and do. Do they try and get Ulissi a bit of a buffer on GC? Because certainly Pogacar will be putting significant time into him on stage four. But now on to perhaps, well, I think the most exciting race of today of our triple header.
Our
Super Wednesday. I wouldn't go that far. Benji, you do produce some exciting racing, but your tax regimes and weather just leave a lot to be desired. 176Ks, the Balwaza Belgium Tour kicked off with an absolutely stacked field. I mean, it's two pro, but it's got Ackermann, Ewan, Ballerini, Stibar, Cavendish, Evenepoel, Groenewegen, Eckhoff, Bol, Nizzolo, De Bont, Merlier. I'm just reading random names off the list. It's insane that we've got how many World Tour teams? 9 World Tour teams. It's absolutely stacked race. And I think that's, don't tell Benji, but Belgium really is, well, I still think the heart of cycling. But yeah, the profile for this race, flat, pretty much, and then they go and do some reps of a circuit, which includes the Bergten Hoogte. We have a gold. It says golden. Is golden in Dutch golden, Benji?
I have no clue what you're talking about. Like, genuinely.
The word for golden, is it golden?
Gouden.
G-O-U-D. Gouden.
But yeah, that's a problem because like I'm West Flemish, which means that I pronounce every G like an H, and we get laughed at for the entire country because of that. So for me, it's Gouden, but it's technically Gouden.
Okay. Gouden kilometer is with 160 k's to go. Now, you remember that from the Bink Bank tour last year, an absolutely fantastic gimmick where you get there's three bonus seconds on offer with in three times in a kilometer. So 0 meters at the start of the golden kilometer, Gouden kilometer, you get 3, 2, 1, then 500 meters to go, 3, 2, 1, and then at the end of the golden kilometer, 3, 2, 1. So 9 seconds available for whoever leads through there. And other than that, it was a rolly course. It was quite difficult. Got some cobbled climbs, not too nasty. Then it's finished with a bit of an uphill drag. They do the Bergten Hoogte close to the finish. And yeah, just a nasty course to start the race. And that was what was surprising to me, Benji. I want to start with Caleb Ewan and Lotto trying to stay at the front on the hard part of that circuit. The break was about 120, 130. Was that too, with the road so narrow, was that so they could control the pace to keep it slow when they had Frison and co. at the front with Ewan?
I would have guessed so. I would have guessed that they were trying to get this towards a decent sprint with, well, Ewan for them. But some other people weren't really agreeing with that. And I think we easily saw that going into the last portion of the race. But all in all, I think that indeed sprinter teams were trying to keep it controlled while teams that don't necessarily have the pure sprinter here, because, for example, De Koenig was planning to go here with Bennett. They have Cavendish here as a replacement because Bennett has a knee injury or something. And as a consequence, I don't believe that they were going to like directly say, ah, Cavendish, he's on the same level as Caleb Ewan. So, nah, I don't think so. So I think that they're going to be more aggressive throughout this stage and perhaps try something. And that's something we saw, because I watched this race, the last 30 kilometers, I got to be honest about that, because I was focused on the two races we were supposed to cover instead of the one that we were not going to cover. And then my Twitter lit up because I received by, I think, Joe Wakelin, a message on Twitter, Remco's attacking, Remco's attacking. And I was like, okay, I got to watch this now. some OG Remco is always welcome, even though it's like he was 18 back then. So I'm not sure it's that OG. But all in all, we saw a move by Remco, and I think that did anything happen beforehand, or?
I think it's just, it was the race was split apart. I think Ballerini and Lampard were like being a bit aggressive. Gilbert had been aggressive as well. Mm-hmm. I think the sprinters teams, you know, they got Ewan in particular here, Cavendish as well, but Cavendish has also got Evenepoel on the team. The sprinters teams were trying to keep it slow, just trying to hopefully bring back the break gradually. But this circuit was really tough. And I think it, you know, we saw that with sprinters like Ballerini. When Evenepoel went up the road, Ballerini tried to bridge with Philippe Gilbert, or not bridge, he was marking Philippe Gilbert and was sitting on him the whole time, not helping him. And with the 26 degree heat and this hard circuit, he eventually cracked completely. So yeah, Ewan eventually got dropped, I think, off when Gilbert was accelerating as well. But yeah, a vintage Evenepoel attack, and he brought with him Campenaerts, and then he mopped up two guys, Benji. Do you have any insight on these two riders with him, Gianni Marchand and Robbie Gijs from Tartaletto Isarex and Sport Vlaanderen and Baloise, respectively? Do you know much about their backgrounds?
I think that Gijs has a track background. I don't know to what extent. So I can't tell you if he's great at it or not, because I don't exactly follow track cycling to the bone. But I know that he had that. Marchand I've seen in the breakaway quite a few times. I can't tell you how good he is because, yeah, usually breakaways do get eaten up by the peloton towards the end of the stage on the majority of races. And those two riders, well, I think there was another rider in there somewhere. I don't know which one, though. But they indeed got mopped up by Remco and Campenaerts. And the second that Remco attacked, I don't think Campenaerts took over for more than 10 seconds from that point onwards for the next 20 kilometers, nor the other people that he mopped up, which is insane to think about. And then you question, is it because if Remco is attacking, they know he's going for GC and they can benefit off of that? Or do you think that it's more the situation of Remco spacing so damn hard, his watts are too high to try and take over here?
I think they're just, we're on the limit from the initial bridge. Particularly Kapanas visibly looked on the limit. I think it's really hot conditions, and particularly with respect to Kais and Marchand, they're going for the stage. A stage win for them is a huge result. They're not here for GC. There's no chance they can win GC. They've gotten a break, perhaps just for advertiser exposure. What better advertiser exposure than to try and be in a break with now Remco Evenepoel with all the cameras? And, you know, Benji said his phone lit up. You know, everyone's starting to tune in. Oh my God, Evenepoel's on the move. What better advertising for them? So just sit on for as long as possible, try and hang on as long as possible. So I think what they did was perfectly logical. I think what we saw later with Kampenaerts eventually dropping on one of the climbs off the back of Remco's pace was an indication that he wasn't feeling great. He was on the limit. He eventually pulled off to the side of the road. He looked like he had cramps. He had to get off his bike and stretch out his hamstrings or calf. So Kampenaerts yet dropped off the pace of Evenepoel. And Evenepoel's pacing the whole way. They had the golden kilometer. He takes 3:33. I think with Kampenaerts on his wheel, taking 2:22. Yep. And so Evenepoel takes a 9-second buffer on GC. And yeah, he's looking good. And the chase behind, really, the main team having to chase Benji was Alpecin. And I was thinking, well, that's for Merlier, right? But then they've got Jasper Philipsen as well. I'm not sure if Merlier had been dropped, but they've got Jasper Philipsen, who was good in this sort of race. They've also got Dries de Bont. Are you surprised that Alpecin couldn't get more organized to chase this back? Because they had Riesebeek, they had the numbers. I thought they could have made more of a dent in Evenepoel, particularly because, I don't know, he caught two guys that had been in the break and they were able to hang on with him. And he pretty much was able to hold the gap constant. I feel like there must have been more to the chase behind. There must have been quick step blocking or Alpecin not being able to ride full for some reason.
Well, in the initial point, we had a counter by Gilbert there, which, well, was an attempt, and that caused Lotto Soudal to sit up in the peloton while Gilbert was doing that move. And I think at that exact moment, we noticed that Ballerini was in that wheel. Ballerini just died instantly in the wheel of Gilbert, just parquet Joe on the next climb. But that reduced the people that were doing stuff in that other group, and Quickstep was indeed blocking every second that they could, and it took a while for Alpecin to move to the front and actually take over. And I think it took until, well, a few minutes before Gilbert got caught, like a good 7-8 kilometers later. So definitely, like, the chase wasn't going very optimal, and the getting together just off the attack for Alpecin was troublesome. Perhaps Philipsen might have been a bit in trouble at the end of the group, and they had to wait until he was in proper place again to start hammering it at the front of the peloton. So all stuff like that can definitely influence the chase, and I think it indeed started, well, toning down a bit, because it went from like 37 seconds to 30 seconds the second that Riesebeek indeed came to the front of the group. And that was an exact moment where at the front, Evenepoel complained to the rest of the group with 8K to go, come on, like, I can't do everything here alone. But let's be real, he was going to have to do everything alone at that point, because he had been doing it for the last 20 kilometers. And I thought, this looks like Riesebeek is going faster. But every single time, Evenepoel just kept riding, and he must have been stronger than the peloton today. Like, you can't say much else about it. Like, he kept the gap, and he expanded it a little bit when Alpecin's train, well, went a bit slower at a certain point, and Alpecin, well, I think Lotto came to the front again. I don't know what the point of Lotto there was, probably to, like, reduce the gap again so that Gilbert has less of a disadvantage in GC after this stage, stuff like that. So towards the end, they started working together in the peloton again, but I think that the chase certainly was not optimal, but I do think that being able to keep yourself and that group ahead of the likes of Riesebeek like that is pretty damn impressive. And to push so hard that Viktor Krampenaerts decides to exist, I'm taking a claim of that joke. Thomas de Gendt posted it 45 seconds later than me on Twitter, so technically I'm the copyright holder of the joke. But all jokes aside, we had a powerful Evenepoel, but there was a moment there where Robert Gijs in the front tree went off-road for a bit, and Evenepoel had a bit of a gap, the Marchand guy had to go past Tropiez and try to close it down. And 10 seconds later, we saw the group again and they were together again. So I don't know. It looked like Evenepoel was pushing a tiny bit there. But then again, if he really pushed, I feel like he should have been able to drop them there.
And I'm surprised.
The same situation happens on the Berchtenhouten just after that. The last climb of the day, which means that he went over that climb and he did accelerate because he went faster and he was biting his teeth. But the fact that they were able to hold on does show that this might not be peak Evenepoel yet, and he might indeed be going towards Olympics in best form, as that is his main goal of the season, which right now is looking pretty good for, I'd say. And tomorrow's a time trial, so we might prove it again. But back to the stage. Robichaud is back on the wheel, Marchand back on the wheel, and Evenepoel still hammering it in the final few kilometers.
We know that Evenepoel's sprint is terrible. I also was surprised that he couldn't gap them, but he tried twice. When he saw that they made the mistake through that corner, he must have gone full, and he tried to push on the climb. I think eventually he's probably still not at full fitness, as well as these guys were sitting on it. I know they'd been in the break, but they'd been sitting on his wheel for over 20 kilometers, not pulling at all. So that's certainly a big advantage. And yeah, he got to the final. And he's also, Evenepoel's riding for GC partially as well. They're going just for the stage. He's going for GC. That's why when it comes down to it, he's going to lead out the sprint. Because if he sits up and they start doing cat and mouse, well, he's going to lose. He's only 25, 30 seconds ahead of the peloton. You're going to do all this work for 45, 50 minutes at the end of the race plus to then give it back in the last 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and then it's all for nothing and you probably still lose the sprint. So Evenepoel leads out the sprint. He's very unlikely to win that sprint and he doesn't. Marchand jumps early. Evenepoel actually kicks and looks like he's beating him, but Robichaud comes from his left-hand side on this uphill drag and destroys Evenepoel in the sprint for Sport Vlaanderen and Baloise. Big win for him. I think he won a stage of the Ras in 2018. I think Sport Vlaanderen's last win, I'm trying to look, did they win a race in 20? They didn't win in 2020. They didn't. They won the Tour de l'Euro Metropole with Piet Allegaert in 2019. And they won that stage of the Ras with Robbie Gijs in 2018. And they won three races in 2017. So a dot pro win here is, I think Euro Metropole might be that, but this is their biggest win for almost half a decade. I haven't even gone back further. And they beat Evenepoel as well at the finish. That's why he sat on. That's why he was celebrating so much. And that's why a lot of this made sense to me, Benji. But we've got some people saying Remco, and even commentary, Remco stuffed up. Remco should have tried to drop them more, et cetera. Do you agree with that? Did he tactically stuff up this stage?
Well, it's an assumption from everybody. I feel like he tried twice and it didn't work out. If he had the power, he probably would have properly dropped them at some point. So I think that maybe people are overestimating him a bit. His main goal is GC here. He doesn't really care too much about the stage. He probably wanted it, but it's not the overall goal here. The overall goal is gaining time and to make sure that you've got a bit more of an advantage going into the time trial tomorrow, where you will probably extend his lead again for GC. So, in all honesty, he's at the lead. He was the last leader in 2019 at this race. He's the first leader in 2021 at this race. And I don't see an easy way of getting rid of him unless he has bad luck and crashes somewhere.
It's like that stage in stage four of the Paloise Belgium Tour in 2019, a similar length, 150K, some hills. Evenepoel was in a move with Campenaert and Kroon, and they sat on his wheel all day, and they beat him in the sprint. But he was, 52 seconds ahead on GC, extending his GC gap on everybody else. So, yeah, GC-wise, and I think this goes further to, how can Evenepoel solve this? Because his sprint is terrible. That's not ever going to – his sprint is never going to be good, I don't think. What can he do differently as a guy who – everyone's going to say, well, you're trying to gain the GC time. What can he do differently? And I guess nothing when there's guys with those sort of motivations in his group. All he can do to get them to work with him is to agree that he'll give them the stage in certain situations. Yep. So,
but the problem there is that I don't think they would have been very helpful. And I think even Evenepoel pacing at a tired pace would have been most likely faster than the other people taking over, because they didn't look like they were having too much left except for Gijs for that final sprint. But if it comes down to the final 200 meters, it's all or nothing for those people. And I think Gijs found something extra. And it's not like he was sparing energy for the sprint, most likely. He was trying to hold on to the wheel, most likely.
Exactly. It's difficult in these Belgium races where even if Evenepoel says that, they'll be like, well, you running tempo might drop me on the next climb. I don't know. If so they're like, I'm not putting anything additional in. Whereas in a Grand Tour on like a flat stage or something where you catch the break, like all Basque Country, David Gaudu and Roglic is a good example of where that can sort of work. But it doesn't work in these sort of punchy Belgian races, or particularly when the ability discrepancy is so big between the two riders. But tomorrow's stage, from Nokerheist to Nokerheist, it's the TT, 11.2Ks. Evenepoel, he came second today, so he's first on GC because of the golden kilometer rule that he won. So he took 9 seconds there, then lost 4 seconds back to Heist in the sprint, but came second. So yeah, he's first on GC, Heist second, 5 seconds back. The next best biggest GC contender, Philipsen, is at 43 seconds with Schelling, who was a big contender for GC, and Enkhorn, etc. The TT tomorrow, Evenepoel should probably put time into them as well. I'm not sure how much, 10 seconds, 12 seconds, I'm not sure. But if he's going into the later stages with a minute, that is certainly a big help as well. But yeah, who do you think wins tomorrow's stage, Benji?
Tomorrow's stage of the Bawaza Belgium Tour will be won by... Okay, let's be real. There's only one person I've got on this damn list, and it's...
Harry
Sweeney. Definitely not... No. I'm looking for competitors. Like, I'm really looking for competitors, but it's very hard to find them. Like, it's a short one. It's a very short one, which means that there could be competition. But who?
Kampenaerts? Like,
he's a classics rider now, mate.
Is he? I don't know. Is he trying in the TT? If he was, like, fully locked into TT life.
No, sorry, Decker. The reason why I'm saying that is because he had that good first time in the last Giro time trial, because he sprinted the first portion of the time trial. If he sprints this one.
All right, well.
I'm desperately looking, okay? Let's be real. Like,
in the 13K flat TT in UAE, Decker, where did he come?
No, we're not going to. No. We're not going to go there.
It's Evenepoel tomorrow's stage. And he's the out and out favorite for tomorrow's stage. But, you know, this is cycling. Weirder things can happen, particularly in an 11K TT. If it was a 30K TT, I think we'd be even saying it's 95%. But nothing sure in these short
Mullen top five?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, who knows how his legs feel after today, Evenepoel. It wouldn't surprise me, but...
How's Schelling's time trial? Because, like...
That's the interesting
one. Oh, it's actually decent. Aethon on the first stage on Itzulia.
Yeah.
And when it comes to GC, I feel like he might be the... underdog competitor of an Evenepoel on this. He's been winning, which is good. He won that Hepe Hippingen race in Switzerland. So I think that Schelling might be one of the riders that could be good in GC after this, and definitely after tomorrow's time trial.
All right. That's our recap of Bawaza Belgium Tour at stage one. Other news is that Juan Ayuso is dominating the Baby Giro. We'll have to catch up with that mate for one pod at the end, because he's signed for UAE for like 5 years, but he is absolutely destroying the competition there. But if you enjoyed the triple header, make sure to leave us a review on podcast players. But otherwise, we'll see you with the recaps of some of the stages tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.